My name is Peter. I once was a fisherman, and sometimes I worked on the docks when fishing was slow. Honestly, some days I think about going back to fishing. But then again, how could fishing ever compare to walking with the Messiah? As tempting as it is some days, no way am I ever going to be able to go back to fishing for a living. Let me just tell you about last week. It was an amazing week. They often are when you hang out with Jesus. Last Thursday, we got into John's 10-meter boat because Jesus had told us he wanted to cross over to the other side of the Sea of Galilee. There were six of us with him. And when we started out from the dock, it was a perfect sailing day. I mean, it was just one of those perfect days on the water. The wind was steady and sure, north by northwest. The sails weren't snapping. The speed was steady across the lake. It was a dream day on the water with Jesus. I nudged James and Andrew, pointing out that Jesus had fallen asleep in between two burlap bags of lentils near the bow of the boat. It was probably tuckered out. We've been traveling a lot lately. And while we were poking gentle fun at the sleeping Jesus, the weather went demonic on us. There's just no other way to describe it. Smooth and steady sailing one minute, and suddenly we had a chop like you would not believe. I mean, sometimes we'll get a chop, but usually it just smooths out again. But not this time. We went from chop to white caps to swells to waves to taking on water in 15 minutes flat. Like out of a blue sky, the nor'easter came tearing through. No, fishermen, sailors were a superstitious lot, but this was spooky. I call it demonic because it had a malice to it, a viciousness that we never see on the sea here. And suddenly, here I am, an ex-fisherman, bailing water for all I'm worth, just trying to keep us from sinking to the bottom of the sea. The wind is howling like 35 screaming banshees. I can't even hear what the other guys on the boat are saying. The lightning, you wouldn't believe. The thunder. I swear, it seemed like I could see all the way through John's body. The lightning was so bright and intense and close. And purple dots dancing behind my eyes. And this wasn't that far off, big flashes of lightning. This was right next to you, the hair on your arm standing up on ends, the smell of ozone burning in your nose, wet your pants kind of lightning. Okay? I'd come to the conclusion that in about 3 minutes, we were all going to be walking on the bottom of the sea. I mean, I was bailing for all I was worth. I'd never seen a storm like this. I'd never ridden on waves like this. Out of the corner of my eye, I see James and John shaking Jesus awake, and I thought to myself, good, one more set of hands bailing water. I don't think it's going to help very much. Jesus stood up, and he braced his feet far apart for balance, and he looked up into the sky, and he looked at the waves, and he looked right at and he began to shout. At first, I thought he was shouting something to me, but I couldn't hear anything. And then it became apparent that he was shouting at the waves, at the storm around us. His arms went out high and wide. And he lowered them slowly. And the waves lowered with his arms. He told the wind to be still. It died an instant death. One final bolt of lightning shot across the bow of the boat, almost hitting Jesus. If my pants hadn't already been wet. The silence was deafening. I was trembling. I mean, 1 minute ago I was fighting for my life. Now I just sat in the water, in the bottom of the boat. More scared than I had been in the storm. Because he just made it stop. That scared me more than anything had ever scared me in my whole life. And he just stood, arms at his side, legs braced wide, and he looked every one of us right in the eye. And he asked, "Where's your trust?" In a soft, sad voice. And then he went back over to the two bags of lentils and he sat looking out over the sea with his back to all of us. Andrew asked me in a hoarse whisper, "Did that really happen?" Dr. Luke answered, because I couldn't say anything, "Oh yes, that just happened. And if I hadn't seen it with my very own eyes, I don't think I would have believed a single one of you if you told me the story." We put the sails back up, turned the ship back south in the proper direction, and continued on to the other side. Now, frankly, if I'd known what was going to happen next, I probably would have jumped out of the boat and swam back to Galilee. But I didn't know what was going to happen. We got to the opposite bank. By this time, Jesus had stood up. He was standing on the bow of the boat, and he just hopped lightly onto shore when we beached the boat. There was a naked man waiting for Jesus. And Jesus said to him, "I command you to come out from him." We had no idea what was going on. We were dropping the sails, dropping the anchor, securing the boat, while watching this naked man fall to his knees before Jesus, head to the sand, his arms stretched out toward Jesus, and he said with a loud voice, "What have you to do with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? I beg you, do not torment me." We were all jumping off the boat, gathering around behind Jesus. And Jesus said, "What is your name?" And the man said, "Legion." Oh, my word. And the man continued to babble in what sounded like 12 different voices, begging Jesus not to command them to depart into the abyss. I was starting to get an idea of what was going on, and the scars on this man were unbelievable. No telling how many years he had been in bondage to Legion. I also realized we had an audience. There were about a half a dozen herders watching this large sounder of pigs on the hillside in front of us. And over here there were some shepherds watching a few herd of cattle. The naked man with the 12 different voices asked, begged for permission to enter the pigs. Jesus gave them permission. And the man exploded off the ground about 2 meters into the air, his body turning, jerking, snapping, spinning in the air like he was caught in a funnel cloud. And then he fell to the ground like a 50-kilo bag of beans dropped out of a wagon, like a dead man. It sounded like a bomb went off in the sounder of pigs. They exploded down the hill just to our right and directly into the sea. Hundreds of them, all stepping all over one another. It was like they were in a frenzy to get to the opposite side of the lake that we had just come from. And in amazement, we stood there watching them drown. The lake was covered with dead pigs. I heard a sound coming from my left, and I saw the herdsmen all running away. I understood. I wanted to run away too. This day had been way too weird already. The man's on the ground. He's starting to stir. Jesus turned around and looked at me, and he told me to give the man my extra pair of pants and tunic that I had in my satchel. He told John to give the man an extra pair of sandals that he had in his. He told Andrew to give him the extra jacket that he had in his satchel. He told us then to start collecting driftwood and to make a fire. I mean, I did what Jesus told me to do. I started collecting firewood. I gave the dude my clothes. But honest to Moses, the only thing I could think of was, too bad it wasn't the cows that had drowned. I was really hungry for a steak. I sat there for the next couple of hours listening to Jesus talk to this man. And listened to this man ask Jesus endless questions. As we were sitting there, a group of people came up to the shore where we were circled around the fire. The crowd began to grow. They had all their attention intensely focused on the man who had been legion. You could smell their fear like a dead animal. One of them finally got up the courage and asked the man, what happened? Why was this man sitting here calmly listening to Jesus? Another man I recognized as one of the herdsmen didn't even give the man a chance to explain. He just blurted out all that had happened in those first 3 minutes when we had arrived on the shore. And instead of calming them down and helping them to relax, the telling of the events from a few hours ago just increased their anxiety and their fear. I thought they were going to pick up rocks and start beating us with them. They insisted that Jesus go back to wherever he came from. And so we got into the boat. Jesus confidently, the six of us with great trepidation, and we started back to Galilee. We arrived about 2 hours after daybreak, a fairly peaceful return, thankfully. And there was no place to beach the boat. The entire shoreline, as far as we could see around the entire cove, was slammed with people. A huge crowd was there waiting for Jesus. And as we got in close, the boat forced some of them back, and Jesus leapt lightly to the ground, right into a few military types. They were there, apparently working for some local guy named Jairus, who I found out later was a ruler of the synagogue. Finally, we all got off the boat, and were standing there behind Jesus, our feet almost in the water at our backs. This Jairus had dropped to his knees at Jesus' feet. He begged Jesus to come to his house. He said, Master, Master, my one and only child, my precious daughter, is deathly sick. Please, please, if you have any mercy in you at all, please come and help her. Help us. We waited so long for this child. All we have, anything. I will give you anything to come to my house and help my daughter. My wife will not survive if she doesn't. I'll lose them both. Jesus looked him in the eyes and said, we will come. Jairus popped up off the ground and he gathered his guards around him and started to press through the crowd, yelling for them to move, get out of the way so that we could follow him. But everyone was trying to reach Jesus. Everyone was shouting at him for information or for assistance or about someone who needed his help or about some need that they had. It was absolute bedlam. I was starting to feel more like a bodyguard than a fisherman. The six of us had surrounded Jesus very closely. We were trying to protect him from the crush of people. And, of course, we wanted to be seen with Jesus. And we didn't want to lose sight of Jairus and his guards. I could see them right ahead of us going around a wagon with two oxen attached, which was blocking the natural path to the city. And when we slowed down to make our way around the wagon, suddenly Jesus is walking along, and he came to such a complete and sudden stop that I ran into him. Then he asked the most ridiculous question ever formed in the history of humanity. Who touched me? I I thought to myself, okay, it's time to get Jesus a hat. He's been out in the sun way too long, okay? Misunderstood him. And thankfully, I didn't have to yell, because when Jesus had stopped and then asked this question, this lack of forward progress quieted the crowd, and I asked him in a loud whisper, Master, you're surrounded by thousands of people. They're all trying to touch you. What do you want us to do? Jesus ignored me. Sometimes I don't even know why I bother to try to protect him from looking stupid. But Jesus said with calm certainty, someone touched me. Someone touched me, and I felt vital power go out from me. There may have been thousands of people there, but a statement like that was quiet. And suddenly, a little old grandma was jostling my left elbow. I turned around and looked at her, and it was apparent that she was terrified. She dropped down to her knees, which was about 3 centimeters. I mean, she was so short. I swear she looked just like my grandma. And in this trembling voice, she explained that it was me that touched you, Jesus. And when I touched you, I was instantly healed. Oh, wow. Silence rang. Said to her, daughter, your trust has made you well. Go in peace. Oh man, there was another pregnant moment of silence, and then it was like a huge surge of energy throughout the entire crowd as they all lunged toward Jesus trying to touch him. It was 10 times worse than before. I was about to get trampled. This was getting really old. I'm here to tell you, okay? In the last 36 hours, I'd almost drowned. I'd almost been struck by lightning. I'd almost been split in two by thunder so loud I couldn't hear for an hour afterwards. I heard a single man speak in 12 voices like a choir out of tune. Then I was almost ran over by a sounder of pigs. Nasty, unclean, non-kosher, filthy. Can you imagine anything worse being run over by? We were almost stoned by a crowd of people who were terrified of the dead pigs. And by the man who now only spoke in a single voice. And now I was about to be trampled by an insane crowd of people who were all frantically trying to reach and touch Jesus all at the same time. And unfortunately, I was in the way. And I responded like any red-blooded male would. I started to get angry. Good and angry. I was ready to start throwing those grandmas back into the water. There was a commotion off to one side. So it captured everybody's attention. Men on horses, forcing the crowd to part and scatter. The man in the lead reached Jairus and said, your daughter died. Don't bother the teacher anymore. Silence again. Jesus came up beside Jairus and took him by the elbow. Look deep into his crushed, hopeless eyes and said, don't be afraid. Only trust and she will be well. Jairus looked up at the man on the horse, somebody he had known for a long time, obviously trusted. He looked back at Jesus. He looked at the man on the horse. Look back at Jesus. He slowly shook his head, yes. It took us about 3 hours to get to Jairus' house. And I'm here to tell you, we could hear them long before we could actually see them. The professional mourners were already outside the home, in the home, weeping and crying like the whole village had died. They tried to prevent us from even coming into the compound and interrupting the mourning process. Jesus had only allowed James and John and myself to go along with him this far to the with the parentals. And we were trying to force our way into the courtyard. The professionals were making fun of us, shouting derisive taunts at us, calling Jesus a charlatan, and accusing us of playing on the emotions of the family. The girl was long dead. Jesus and Jairus locked eyes. Jairus gave a slight nod to us. And we turned and went into the home through the front door. The six of us, Jairus, his wife, Jesus, James, John, me. We went into the little girl's room. She wasn't breathing. She had a very waxy, bluish color to her skin. A sob tore through mother. I wanted to sob too. Such a beautiful child. Tiny for her age, emaciated body, clearly had been sick for a very long time. But Jesus acted like nothing was wrong. He had a little smile at the corner of his mouth. His eyes were closed, and his head was cocked slightly to the side, like he was listening to a conversation none of the rest of us could hear. And with that little smile in place, he opened his eyes, reached out and took that icy cold hand of that tiny little girl and said, "Rise and shine." Now, I know you're tired of this story. I know I'm exhausted having lived through it, but let me tell you what happened, because it wrecked me. He told that little girl to rise and shine. And there was like a power surge in that small, crowded room that was crowded with the seven of us. It was like the whole room got brighter. It was like another one of those lightning bolts were going to flash right across in front of Jesus. And right before our eyes, starting at the hand Jesus was holding, normal and natural color returned to her skin. And then I almost whipped myself because she stood up. She sat up straight up in the bed. All of us were falling back all over each other. Scared as silly. Her mom burst out into loud sobs, threw herself at the little girl. I couldn't tell where Jesus started and the little girl ended. Jesus said to mom, "Let's get her something to eat." I had to take a few days off after all this. So I grabbed a fishing pole and my sleeping bag and some food and drink after these 2 days because I just needed to process. I just needed some time to process what I had seen, what I had experienced. I didn't go fishing in my boat. I'm a little wary of boats and water right now, but I fished from the bank for 4 or 5 days. I lost track of time. The conclusion I came to is this. Jesus has power and authority over the natural elements. Jesus has power and authority over good and evil spirits. Jesus has power to heal the physical body, bodies that physicians can't touch with a 10-foot pole. Jesus has power and authority over death. I just can't quite get over that little smile tugging at his lips when he told that little girl to rise and shine. It's not a fable. It's not a fairy tale. He is exactly what those 12 voices called him. He's Jesus, Son of the Most High God. And he rules and he reigns today. So no, I can't go back to only being a fisherman or a dock worker, though I still do it sometimes to make a little bit of money. I told you these firsthand experiences that I had with Jesus in those 2 days. So how can I go back to fishing? How can you only be a banker? How can you only be a doctor? How can you only be a teacher? How can you only be a mother? How can you only be a politician? How can you only be a businessman? How can you only be a student? How can we only live for ourselves and our small worlds when we have somebody like this to